If we today were to take a walk through the empty halls of Columbine High School, we would hear the collective cry of a mournful community. When I was a youngster in high school, occasionally as I would stay late and play basketball and other things like that, as all of you did, I'd end up walking through the corridors of the class, of the halls there, and through the halls of the school, and I'd go to my locker. I had a little combination I had to use to get into my locker, and I remember, you know, I'd open it and then I'd close it, and if no one else was in the hall, it would just reverberate, this echo would just reverberate through the hall. And if you slammed it really hard, of course, it made a lot of noise. I don't think anybody is doing that today, because today is Saturday, it's a weekly Sabbath. I doubt too much is going on inside that tragic area where two gunmen, two murderers, two young men walked into their school, a school where they had gone for several years, and they began to use extremely powerful weapons to do the unthinkable. It is indeed an unfathomable evil that was perpetrated just a little bit over a week ago, and it cost lives. I don't want to go back and rehash all of that because the press is doing enough of that. You see it, even we were looking at it this morning on television, and we're well aware that there will continue to be report after report after report after report ad nauseum about this. That no way, however, diminishes the element of human suffering. And I'd like to talk to you all about it today. I don't know if I'm going to preach so much of a sermon as I'm going to talk to you about what's really behind that, at least from my observation. Because there's already an attempt, and there has been since day one, to try to blame someone. Let's find out the cause. Well, I'm going to give you the real reason why before the day is over. And it's pretty simple. And it's been there all along. And it's going to be there tomorrow. It's going to be there the next day. It's going to be there next month. It's going to be there next year. It's going to be there until Jesus Christ returns to this earth to say, listen, it was there all along. Why did this happen? That's the question. Just as much if I slam my locker door and it reverberates through the hallway, that echoing question that everybody's asking, and I have magazines here which I could hold up for you, and they're big headlines. Well, here's one, you can see it. The question of why. Everybody wants to know why. And then they call these two young men monsters, which by that definition certainly applies. Betsy was watching television this morning, the news station, and she was telling me, I didn't see this myself, but she was telling me that apparently one of the parents of the children who were killed has gone up to wherever those 15 crosses have been planted and taken down the two black ones. See, there were 15 crosses, if you're not aware of that, planted there in recognition of those who lost their lives. There were 12 young students, men and girls, young men and young girls. There was the teacher, Mr. Sanders, and then there were the two murderers. So you have altogether 15 who lost their lives. I thought it rather interesting that some of the kids apparently did originally erect those 15 crosses, and let's not debate the use of a cross today, okay? You understand what that means. It was an outpouring of recognition and forgiveness, and yet ironically, two of the crosses were black because of the sadistic nature of what had taken place at the hands of these two young men. So they wanted to recognize them, but they didn't want to ignore what they had done. But apparently now, if what Betsy observed or heard on TV is true, that someone has gone up there and taken them down. As I consider and look back at what's happened there, it is truly startling to see the extremes that are available to us as human beings. As young men, as older men, as young girls, as older women. Such goodness we are capable of, and such evil we are also capable of. Does that strike you strange? Well, it shouldn't, because the Bible talks to us about how we are. And let's not be deceived. There's a verse that we used to memorize. Do all of you remember that verse? It's Jeremiah 17:9. What does that verse say? And I don't want to make a sermon just around that verse today, but what does Jeremiah 17:9 say? It talks about your heart, and it says that the heart is what? It is deceitful above all things, and it is what? It is desperately wicked. Boy, those are tough words. Desperately wicked. That's frightening, because I realize that inside of me then I have that capacity to be desperately wicked. And we get into this habit of categorizing sin, and this is worse than this, and this is worse than that. And such is the case with this awful tragedy. And I do not want to minimize this, and I want to be very careful about weighing it carefully in the scales of justice. Because as a minister and as Christian people, as servants of Jesus Christ, our primary concern is one of compassion. You and I do want to be compassionate toward the parents, the grandparents. Mr. Sanders' wife was interviewed this morning on television. I didn't realize this, but he has how many children? Grandchildren? He has 10 grandchildren, Betsy heard this morning. I didn't know that. Well, I look at this audience today. I see grandparents out here. Just imagine how you would feel if one of your grandchildren had been violated in this way, an innocent victim. And I guess that's what just horrifies me as I try to visualize what happened in that hall or in the halls, in the cafeteria, in the library, in the corridors, where innocent children, yes, they were full of the vim and the vigor, and they were probably going to get into some mischief that evening, the boys and girls, as all kids do, but none of them ever suspected that two of their classmates would come in those black trench coats and come with all that artillery and begin to shoot them. It's a terrible thing. What an extreme of good and an extreme of bad. Remember what Jeremiah 17:9 says. Don't forget that. It makes no difference how we want to get up and blame someone. That's the residual foundational principle we must understand about ourselves. And it is in all human beings. What is it that poisoned the souls of these two young men? What created such evil that they would walk down the school shooting and laughing, throwing bombs? At the latest count, apparently 50 bombs have been accounted for. And they were apparently going to rock their school and completely level it if everything had gone like they wanted to. Such goodness can come in the face of evil. Mr. Sanders, the teacher who was well-loved, well-liked, father, grandfather, he was shot, as you all know. You've seen the pictures of his family. And yet, while he was dying, he was mortally wounded. He managed to drag himself to protect some of the students that he was given charge over. Such goodness in a man who was dying. And in my heart, I'm pulled compassionately to think if they could have just gotten to him a little bit sooner. Couldn't they have made a difference? Apparently, he was bleeding profusely for a couple of hours, and the students that he had saved, the fellows had taken off their shirts and bound them up to collect the blood that was coming out of the wounds that he had suffered. And I was thinking, and Betsy and I talked about that, wouldn't it have been wonderful, somehow or another, if the SWAT team or the physicians, the EMTs or whoever could have gotten there just a little bit sooner. But it wasn't to be, and as you well know, and it pulls at your heartstrings, he asked the children that he was protecting to take his wallet out of his pocket, and they showed him pictures of his wife and his daughter, and he said, "Be sure to tell them that I love them," and he died. Unbelievable. But it makes you feel good to some degree that a man in his moment of death could think about his wife and his daughter. Will we ever overcome our obstacles of bias and prejudice and jealousy? One of the things that no one seems to be talking about in all of this, or maybe they have and I just haven't seen it, why is it that we have to have so many guns? And I'm not against guns, by the way. I do believe, because in our country, let's be honest about something. Everybody says, well, how does this happen? Well, I know how it happens. It's pretty careful. I mean, it's pretty easy to see. We live in a democracy. Don't you all realize that we live in a democracy? And because we live in a democracy, this democracy is flawed. And because we live in a democracy, we have acts of unbelievable violence. But I have wondered, and this is just my personal opinion. You see, I because of the Constitution that we're under, I don't have any problem with people owning and possessing guns. I think they should be taught how to use them. But I've never really felt that someone needed a weapon of mass destruction. Have you? Do any of us really need a weapon that can fire out thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds in just a couple of minutes? What are you going to use that for? You know, where does this stop? Well, if we're entitled to weaponry, then why doesn't the government allow us to all have nuclear bombs? I mean, where does it stop? Well, the government intervened and said, well, you can't have that. All right. And I just wish that there would be a collective move on a part of our country nationally to some or other put an end to these weapons of mass destruction, and yet try not to do too much treading on the sacredness of our Constitution, which allows us to have a militia and to be able to bear arms. And I'm not a politician, so I don't have all the answers, except I've always wondered, what does anybody need a weapon that will kill thousands of people for? I can see it in the military because this is a democracy. And in the democracy, we need a militia. If we don't, well, let's just give it up and let whoever it is come over and take us over, because that's certainly what would occur because of the heart is deceitful above all things, and it is desperately wicked. That's the world in which we live. Well, some people would say, well, okay, well, what if we lived under God's government? Boy, I want to live under God's government, but I want to be honest with you. You know, we got to be a little bit careful about getting all upset, as they say, getting our pants in a wad, over all the violence that's going on around us, because when I turn to the Bible, to the Holy Word of God, you know what I see replete throughout the Bible? Violence. I can see when there was Adam and Eve and there was no one else but God and His laws and His principle, His influence and His teaching, that very shortly, in just a matter of a few years, there was murder when all there was God. Why? Because God created us with a capacity for evil. Even if we lived under God's laws today, which we should, I'm going to be talking to you about that, I assure you that we would still suffer incredible acts of violence. So what is the ultimate solution? The ultimate solution is Jesus Christ is going to have to come back to this earth, and He will accomplish incredible war, and then we will go about a period of restoration. And yet, isn't it ironic, think about how prophecy flows, that even after living under a millennial reign of Jesus Christ for 1,000 years, Revelation 20 says, after 1,000 years of God's government, you being a king and a priest, a ruler and a leader, a guide, after 1,000 years, Satan will be loose for a short time, and what happens? There will be mayhem, death, violence, and murder again after 1,000 years of living under God's government. So there has to be some kind of a remarkable change for us to finally divest ourselves of this capacity for such evil that's in all of us. Now, please don't any of you get your feelings hurt. I look at this audience today and I see good people. And I see people here who the last thing you would ever think about is doing something like what those kids did. So I understand that. And yet there needs to be more of you. It doesn't just need to be a handful of folks. It needs to be everyone. And we're a long way from that. Eric and I were talking yesterday, and I think Eric made a good point. You know, our world today is more religious, I believe, than it has been in a long time. Do all of you agree with that? Am I out of line saying that? Listen, we have the Promise Keepers. You're familiar with those folks. I'm not going to debate the pros and cons. I'm just telling you what we have. We have the Promise Keepers by the hundreds of thousands. These are men who are trying to get back to being the kind of husbands they are meant to be. We have the Billy Graham Crusades. They're on TV. Thousands upon thousands of people line up and gather in these arenas and respond to what he says, at least it appears. We have Shuler. We have Swaggart. We have all these people on the television airways out there preaching and preaching and preaching. We have more Sabbath-keeping organizations preaching on a given weekend than I can ever remember. There's more a message about which day you're supposed to be keeping than there has ever been, as far as I know. And yet, the world is really not a much better place, is it? We may pretend that it is, but I feel that it's a little. We've got to be careful about being lulled into a sense of safety, because the potential for enormous violence is all around us. We can reflect back to how it was just a few generations ago. I like to do that. I like to think about how it was, at least morally, several years ago, and how it was in the high school that I went to, and there was never anything like that that would have occurred. We didn't have access to weapons like they did today, but, you know, I guess we did have access to a hunting gun or two, but nobody would have ever dreamed of going in the hallways of the little school that I went to from high school up in Indiana and shoot one of our classmates, even if we didn't like anything or didn't like them. What we would probably do is sort of push and shove. I've been in a few pushes and shoves. Have any of you? And, you know, you get your nose bloodied, or if you prevail, they got their nose bloodied, and you sort of made up, and you went on your own way. But today, they walk down the corridors with deadly weapons, and I can assure you that it's not going to get a whole lot better until it gets worse. Who do we blame? Well, let me quote to you as one journalist wrote. Now, listen to what he said. He says, do we blame the parents? So here are the categories that are open for blame. These are the targets. The parents. I've heard a lot of discussion about the parents of these two young men. Do we blame the savage music? I was startled when, on one of the news clips, they showed the covers of the CDs that young people listen to. And here were people that were ghoulish looking, dark, sinister, barbed wire through their nose and through their ears. And it actually made me wince. I thought, ooh, I don't like that. That makes me uncomfortable to see such a portrayal of abuse in human beings. And I couldn't help but think, I wonder where they came up with that. And then I've seen a little bit about Marilyn Manson. And honestly, I don't know if he's a he or she's a he or he's it or whatever is going on there. But I'm sitting there thinking, how in the world would a parent ever let their children go listen to something like that? It's a democracy, though. Do you understand that? In democracy, and this is what I feel is a great deal behind everything that's going on here, it is the almighty what? Dollar. People sell guns because they make money. Marilyn Manson acts like an idiot or a transvestite or whatever he or she it is because people will pay dollars to go and sit and listen to music that will break their eardrums. Let me tell you something. Marilyn Manson, if his next concert, no one showed up, you know what would happen? He'd come to nothing. So why don't our people, our God-fearing people, with more churches, more preachers, more religious people, why don't we do something? Because I do feel partially responsible, brethren. Because, you know, we have coming into our homes, our television sets, our movies. You know why they do the things that they do on the movies? Because we pay! Let me tell you something. The next time a movie comes out, like the recent one, which was entitled... What's the name of that movie? I forgot. Matrix. Is that it? The Matrix? No. Is that it? The Matrix? Was they've been talking about? They come out there, and I'm going to get a charge out of these Hollywood types. I'm going to take a little bit of a shot here because I think it's well-deserved. The Hollywood types, you know, they get all bent out of shape, and they influence the teens and the styles and the music dramatically. They get all bent out of shape on weapons, and yet look what they do on TV. Look what they do in the movies. A tragedy like this occurs, and then all of a sudden these liberal people, entertainers, come out, and they decry all that violence. But boy, wait until I get to my next movie. I'll shoot, I'll blow, I'll do this, we'll bomb that, we'll murder that individual. Just bring in the bucks. Bring in the money. I'll tell you how to stop that. Don't go see the movies. Just don't go see the movies. I'll tell you how to stop Marilyn Manson. Just don't go see the movies. Just don't go see the music. I'll tell you what to do. Stop seeing him and go listen to Becky. Let's give Becky the money. She plays great music. Christian music. But no, this society of ours with our prurient lusts, we want to feel good. We want to explore what God never intended us to have anything to do with. There's no stopping it. And you know why? Because it's a democracy. Let's be honest about it. This democracy of ours is flawed. You know, Betsy and I were talking about this, and maybe you have too. Can you imagine what would have happened if these two young men had survived? What would have happened? Why, we'd have had all sorts of people up in arms. What to do with these two young men? Well, they're just youngsters. Well, I wonder what made them the way they are. Let's put them into treatment. Let's check out their brains. Let's see what makes them do the things that they do. And on and on and on and on. And yet the Bible's real clear about what to do. Isn't the Bible clear on things like this? I think it really is. I want you to notice something as we proceed along here. Over in the book of Ezra. Ezra chapter 7. I'd just like to make a couple of little comments about us as parents and the way in which we must deal with things, lest we get lulled into a sense of complacency and then we become the victims of our own innocence. Ezekiel chapter 7. Excuse me, Ezra, I'm sorry. Misstated there. Ezra chapter 7. And over in verse 26. Let me tell you something that is a principle of child rearing. It is a principle of violence. It is a principle that God Himself abides by. It's very simple. And whosoever will not do the law of God... Anybody misunderstand what those laws are? If you don't do the law of God and the law of the king, let judgment be executed speedily upon him. whether it be unto death or to banishment or to confiscation of goods or to imprisonment. Because, you know, people do have to be judged. But it's pretty simple there, isn't it? If somebody does something like this, you do something immediately. Speedily. And yet our court system is just clogged with victims, or perpetrators, violators of the law. And everybody gets off, and they get put into these comfortable little, they're not quite like retirement centers, but where they have exercise rooms and TVs and videos and this, that, and the other thing. They even get conjugal rights. Boy, it's really tough being a prisoner nowadays, isn't it? You can go shoot someone, and you can end up getting better treatment inside the bars, inside prison, than you can if you're on the outside. So guess what happens? Our system just clogs up with more and more violent perpetrators of such mindless acts as those that we have witnessed. And I'm tragically concerned about this, I guess because having daughters, having set in schools myself, having in my mind being able to visualize these young men and women. And you know, it makes no difference about the race. You know, the race issue is something we need to be aware of, but let's not let the media make something out of that that it should not be. But let's realize the bias and the prejudice that does exist. And it's a terrible thing that needs to be changed. Because judgment is not executed speedily, you know what there is? There's violence in the land. Such violence in our land. And there doesn't need to be. So who do we blame? Now, come back to this quote, which I didn't finish. Do we blame the savage music they listen to? Do we blame the ease of stockpiling an arsenal? Do we blame the chemistry of cruelty and cliques that has always been a part of high school life but has never been so deadly? Among the many things that did not survive the week was the hymn of all parents, unconsciously the one that they sing as they send their children out each and every morning through the headlines, that means the bad news of the day, to their schools. And here's that hymn. It can't happen here, Lord. No, it could never happen here. But, you know, now we know it can. Roy gave me a magazine he receives, and it's just appalling. I don't know if you really know all the things that are out there. I have to confess to you, I don't. You know, you talk about what's available on the computer games. Well, here's something. I mean, there's something you want your children watching, isn't it? Isn't it the garish, demonic, sadistic, sinister-looking creatures here, which they have to do battle with? But much worse than that, that's just sort of something of your imagination. Here is the old, this is in the latest magazine, this is dated June 1999, of Computer Gaming World. And I don't know anything about the publication except I'm just telling you what they're advertising here. Hail the new world order and then destroy it with mortar. And inside tells you about all the things that you get to do in blowing up and shooting people. There was one other one I wanted you to see, and if you don't think this has an impact on our young people or on your young people, you are mistaken. Here's a nice little layout. See all that right there? I don't know if you can see it or not. Can you see all the blood and the gore and the violence? Can you see that? That's what our young people are doing on computer games today. I remember when it used to be Pac-Man. Do you remember those days? Simple little old Pac-Man. Look at that. Here are all these individuals lined up, and they're being murdered, and blood being splattered all over the place. The only problem is there's these people, you push the button, and they get to come to life again. Here's a picture of someone who is falling, and his back is all riddled with bullets as he's been shot down. That's called Kingpin Life of Crime. And then here's the intro to it. You're going to die. See, I just tell you, I didn't know those kinds of things were out there. As you as parents, I hope you do, and you're aware of what your children are involved in, whether at your home computer or at a school computer. There's all sorts of things in here. I don't subscribe to the magazine, but I was startled. It caused me to blush a little bit when I read through it and looked at some of the portrayals, some of the evil, as I look at it, that can be easily given to our young people. I'd like for you to turn to the book of Jeremiah. We want to spend a little bit of time here this morning to try to answer why this has happened and lay the blame appropriately where it's. Jeremiah. I'd like you to turn to begin with me to Jeremiah chapter 8. So much of what Jeremiah said to those of Judah is applicable to us today. And as I read through this, I want you to follow it and see if you agree. Because when I was reading through these verses the other day, I thought, well, Jeremiah is describing us. Jeremiah is describing me. Jeremiah is describing my community. You know, over in the school system where Betsy teaches, which is just one little school, one section of our community over there, it's absolutely unbelievable the things that go on in that community, that educational community, and we're supposedly the ones that have a good school system. And yet, the degree to which there is or is not AIDS in high school, what a tragedy that is, the degree to which children are just some other because they're in the system, and the most important thing today is not the quality of what the child learns, they just have to put yes, no, four or five, add up this, this, that, anything. The most important thing is they've got to pass this TOS test. Okay, I agree they should pass their tests. But you know, whether or not they pass or fail, there's something incumbent in all of us as leaders and administrators. We should know how to best deal with those children. You don't send them along so that they're in the 12th grade, they can't read. And yet we do that. I don't mean to be too light or too livid about this either, but it reminds me of a little joke that I heard. And this is tragically a commentary on our society today, frankly. You all know this. It's a story about actually, he was a college coach, and he had this great football player. And going through his testing in college, he was failing in chemistry. And, of course, if he failed in chemistry, the rules were that he couldn't play on the football team. So the football coach called up the chemistry coach and said, listen, I'll bring Jimmy over. He says, we got to do something here. He said, if we don't have Timmy on our football team, we're going to lose. I mean, we don't have a chance. You've got to work something out. But he said, well, he failed. He said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll ask him one question, and if he passes it, we'll let him go on. If he doesn't pass, well, he doesn't get to play. So the coach and the boy showed up in the chemistry teacher's office, and the chemistry teacher said to the young man, he says, all right, I've got one question for you. What does H2O stand for? And the young man said, water. And the coach said, oh, no, give him another chance. So maybe we need to focus on, who needs the help the most. I don't know. But kids today just get passed along because of their athletic skills primarily. And then we can see the end of that as well. Well, I don't want to go into a diatribe about all of that. But I do want us to notice a couple of things that are really disturbing. I ask you to turn to Jeremiah 8. What I want you to do, though, is turn to Jeremiah chapter 7, and we'll work our way to Jeremiah 8 before we're through. Jeremiah chapter 7, beginning in verse 1, is a sermon that Jeremiah gives apparently at the temple. And there's a lot of discussion as to when he is giving this sermon. There are two schools of thoughts on it. One is that he's giving this sermon during the spring holy days, the Feast of First Fruits, or in the fall at the Feast of Tabernacles, because of all the pilgrims that have come to Jerusalem for a reason. Now listen to what he says, and I'll read through this a little bit quickly without too much explanation. You follow along with me. The word that came to Jeremiah, this is in verse 1, from the Lord, saying, stand in the gate of the Lord's house and proclaim this word, and say, hear the word of the Eternal, all you of Judah that enter in at these gates to worship the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Trust you not in lying words, saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. In other words, what this is saying, and we'll take just a moment, they were saying that they had great security. They didn't have to worry about anything. They didn't have to worry about their moral behavior because they had the temple. They put their faith in the wrong thing. They put their faith in a thing rather than a being, which was in God Himself. For if you thoroughly amend your ways and your doings, I'll tell you how to thoroughly amend our ways. There should be not one pornographic video center anywhere, brethren. But you know what? This is a democracy. So I guess with the good, we've got to take the evil. Well, let's shut them down. Nobody go inside. You want to close them down? Don't go inside. I'll guarantee you, if nobody goes inside one of those places, it will shut down unless they're doing drugs. Unless they're selling drugs out the back door. Okay, well then, stop using drugs! We can shut down these prurient establishments if we'll just amend our ways and get serious about it. Shut down this stuff. Why? Don't buy it. I'll guarantee you if nobody buys that computer game, they'll stop producing it. You know they will. Because money talks. If none of us go to see the violent movies, they won't produce them anymore. But unfortunately, this is a democracy, and I don't expect that to occur. For those of us in the church, though, the Bible says to thoroughly amend your ways and your doings if you thoroughly execute judgment between the man and his neighbor, if you don't oppress the stranger and the fatherless and the widow, and you do not shed innocent blood. Innocent blood has been tragically shed here just recently. It says, neither walk after other gods to your hurt. Then will I cause you to dwell in the place in the land that I gave to your fathers forever and ever, talking about in the temple or the land that they were in at that time. Verse 8 says, behold, you trust in lying words that cannot profit. Now that's interesting. We trust in lying words that cannot profit. Do we trust in lying words? I think we trust in deceitful words. I think that we have become inured and somewhat inoculated against the reality of what it means for children to run with the wrong crowd, for us to allow a certain amount of drugs and insidious habits like that into our culture, the music, so forth and so on. I already talked about that. I don't need to belabor it. Will you steal? Will you murder? Will you commit adultery? Will you swear falsely? Yes, we do. Come on, let's be honest about it. Sure we do. By we, I don't mean to include this audience. I hope we can exclude that. But I'm talking about as a conscience of our nation. We do. You burn incense unto God. That basically means that you're involved in idolatry, and you do not walk after other gods, or you walk after other gods whom you don't know. Now, Eric and I, as we were talking about it earlier, we talked about this world of ours has turned to religion more than I can recently remember. And as a result, they're doing pretty doggone good, if you will, at the last six commandments. They're doing better at the last six. I'm not so sure they're doing real well with number seven yet. Are you? I think adultery, because today there are ways to prevent the penalty for adultery other than AIDS, which comes along, and of course homosexual acts are involved in that as well. Because of all that's gone on today, you know, I'm not sure we're doing real well at adultery in overcoming it. Let me put it that way. Lusting? Boy, I'll tell you what. There's no end of the I wants that we have. But anyway, I'm going to make my point. I think the society as a whole is doing a little bit better at the last six, but we're still failing pretty miserably at the first four. What do you think? We all worship a God, but I'm not sure we've got the right one yet. We've got images of him, but we don't have the right one. He says, come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered. We are delivered to do all these abominations. In this house, which is called by my name, it has become a den of robbers in your eyes. And then the latter part of verse 11 is really a shocker to me. Behold, even I have seen it, saith the Lord. God saw what happened over in Littleton, Colorado, over at Columbine High School. He sees what goes on every single day in this old world of his. Reminds me of a comment that one of the Holocaust survivors made as just recently there was a great to-do over the anniversary of Hitler and also the ending of the war and so forth and so on, and they interviewed a victim, a survivor of the Holocaust, and they asked this penetrating question. The question of this person who was Jewish was, how do you think God, or what do you think God had to do with what happened in World War II and the annihilation of 6 million Jews? I thought she gave an insightful answer. She said, I think that our God hovers above his people, hovers above all those that he had created, and looked down upon the earth that he had made, and he shook his head and said, oh, look what my creation has done. I have seen it, saith the Lord. Then he goes on in these intermediate verses, 12 on through, talking about Shiloh. He says, you don't think anything can happen here? I'll tell you it can happen. Just go look at Shiloh. Look at what happened to where I used to be. It is destroyed. And though I love this country, I do, I love this country, and I want to be right next to you, shoulder to shoulder, as patriotic as I can be, I am so disappointed at the liberties that are taking place inside of our democracy today that allows so much violence to go unchecked, and then young people will go down and shoot one another, and adults will do the same. Talking about Jeremiah chapter 8, I want us to go along somewhat quickly now to break into a thought beginning of verse 4. And I want you to see if you find yourself in here, because there is one verse, especially verse 12, that really caught my attention. Verse 4, "Moreover, you shall say unto them, Thus saith the Lord, Shall they fall and not arise? Shall he turn away and not return? Why then is the people of Jerusalem slidden back by a perpetual backsliding? They hold fast deceit. They refuse to return." The idea is, if you're being deceitful, return. Stop being that way. If you are adulterous, stop being adulterous and return and come back. If you are tempted to steal, then stop stealing and come back. You have to wonder about the patience of our Almighty God. "You," it says here in verse 6, "I hearkened and heard, but they spoke not aright. No man repented him of his wickedness, saying, What have I to done? Or what have I done?" So when I talk about who's responsible, I don't have the answer for that except to say one thing. The next time I participate and or support anything pornographic, anything of terrible violence, and feed the prurient pockets of those who are going to produce more, if we'll just keep paying for it, you know what? I make my contribution to it. If I go mincing into the back doors of some pornographic institution, I'm making that contribution, and they will not be shut down. They will continue. If I go out and buy an AK whatever it is that will mow down hundreds of people and just like that, then guess what I've done? I've fed the wallets of those who feed upon those lusts of all of us who some or other think we get a charge out of pulling a bullet and mowing down all these types of things. Well, I could go on and on. I'm just saying, we all have a little bit of a part in this, don't we? I think about our young people. The Bible is so clear. I don't want to get off into a tangent on this. But you know, the Bible in the Old Testament was pretty clear about cuttings on your flesh. The reason why this is on my mind, I've seen some of the pictures of these people that are the heroes of our young people today. And they've got all these cuts and machinations and tattoos and all these kinds of things all over their body. And I'm sitting there thinking, why? Because you see, God knew in the very beginning that one thing you do leads to another thing, leads to another thing, leads to another thing. And so you don't start with square one. You don't do it. But we say, well, what difference does it make? What difference does it make? Even something as simple as cuttings. You know, I'm not upset about pierced earrings. Don't misunderstand me. But I never dreamed we'd start piercing our belly buttons, did you? I mean, somebody's got to explain this to me. And then we pierce our nose. You know, we pierce our nose up here. Is there anything that we don't pierce? And without going into description to you, I'm going to tell you, there isn't. Young men will even pierce certain parts of their bodies that are intended for sex and think it's cute. Now God's got to sit up there and say, good night. Just read back here. Just read. It was just here. It's here all along. No, we say, well, it won't hurt. Well, look what happened. And look what's going to happen. Well, let's continue on. I didn't even get to these verses that I wanted to, that really did cause me to think. It says here in verse 8, it says, how do you say we are wise and the law of the Lord is with us? That's pretty much what goes on in our society today. Well, we sort of figured it out. We got all these psychiatrists. We got all these religious teachers. We've got all these mentors. We got all these help programs. So, and we're trying to do God's law. He says, lo, certainly in vain made he it. The pen of the scribes is in vain. And this is talking about the fact that in the Old Testament, this is probably the reference to the New Testament out of the Old Testament, that there were religious writers who were twisting what God's law was and made it say things that are not true. The wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed and taken. Lo, they have rejected the word of the Lord, and what wisdom is in them? Therefore will I give their wives unto others and their fields to them that shall inherit them. For every one from the least unto the greatest is given to covetousness, from the prophet even unto the priest, every one deals falsely. Now, notice in verse 12, were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Now, let me ask you that question. What are we ashamed of in our society anymore? What are we ashamed of? I'm searching. I don't know of anything we're ashamed of anymore. He goes on to say, no, they were not at all ashamed. And you know what? We don't even blush anymore. Isn't that what that says? We don't even blush anymore. The things that we take as commonplace today in our society, I'll guarantee you, our grandparents, and some of you are grandparents in here, you just couldn't believe it. If my grandparents and my grandmother on my mother's side, who was a believer in the church, if she were to be resurrected out of that grave that she's buried in, waiting for the second coming of Christ, she wouldn't believe it. She'd look around and just probably say, "You got to be kidding me." She called me Charles Ed. She'd say, "Charles Ed, how did this happen?" And she'd blush and be beet red. And what causes you to blush anymore? When somebody makes fun of you, maybe is that what makes us blush? Are we ashamed anymore? I don't know. The Bible says that you get to this point, there's no hope for you. Therefore shall they fall among them that fall. That's pretty sobering, isn't it? You're not ashamed anymore. You don't blush anymore. Therefore you're going to fall with those that fall. In the time of their visitation, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. Well, there are other verses in the book of Jeremiah that you could read. You might want to when you have time. It's an interesting read. Talk about a read from Jeremiah chapter 5. And I might read just a couple of verses there quickly. Jeremiah chapter 5 and verse 22. "Fear you not me, saith the Lord? Will you not tremble at my presence, which have placed the sand for the bound of the sea by a perpetual decree, that it cannot pass by?" I know what he's talking about here. Don't be confused. He's talking about an impending invasion that was going to come upon Judah. And he says, "Listen, I put the sands of the earth to retard the never-ending seas." That's what he's saying. He says, "I placed the sands of the sea there, and they stopped the ocean. They stopped the waves. They stopped that motion, which had placed the sand for the bound of the sea by a perpetual decree that it cannot pass it. And though the waves thereof toss themselves, yet can they not prevail. Though they roar, yet can they not pass over it." He says, "But this people has a revolting and a rebellious heart. They are revolting and gone. Neither say they in their heart, let us now fear the Lord our God, that gives rain, both the former and the latter in the season. He reserves unto us the appointed weeks of the harvest," and so forth and so on. And you might read through verses 25 through 31. You notice what it says here in verse 31. I thought this was an interesting way of putting it. He says, "The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means. And my people, love to have it so. We love to go to church and be entertained." And basically, I'll tell you what it is when you turn on television, radio anymore, or television and radio. It's just entertainment. It's just a big show. But we, our people, would have it so. And what will you do in the end thereof? I can tell you how to shut down those false healers that parade, their prance, their princing and antics on TV. Nobody show up for their meetings, not one person. That'll stop all that stuff. But no, we would have it so. We like a big show. Shut down Jerry Springer, brethren. I mean, really? How come it's taken so long? We don't even have it done yet. You all know who he is, don't you? And I don't have a big axe to grind. I mean, and I'm against all that kind of stuff. See? But no, we love it. We fill the audiences because, oh boy, it makes the money. The TV gets a rating. Styles are set. People love stuff like that. What happened to the good old days when there was a system of morality that was far, far different from what we have here today? Well, we're not living under God's government today. We're living under a pretty good government that's pretty diseased as well. And that's democracy. And though I love it, I know that it is flawed. And I know that there are only certain things that I can do. But to some degree, as I mentioned to you, I feel a sense of responsibility to what happened over in Columbine because of the tendency to get lulled into a sense of indifference and complacency about things that I would have blushed over, and now I don't. I need to get it back to where I can blush and be ashamed of such atrocities. Even though they're not going on in my life, not to accept them in what goes on around me. You know, I see some of our young people, just give a little brief talk about this, our young people, just briefly, and I've worked with them for years, and this is a problem in our church, and maybe I should speak on this sometimes, or at some time. Our young people, not everybody, but too many of them are disrespectful. They're disrespectful, brethren. Your kids are disrespectful. They don't know what it means to say yes, sir, no, sir. They don't know what it means to give their word and then do it. They do not know what it means to carry more than their own load. You need to teach them. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We as parents need to get back to teaching our children. Moms and dads need to spend time with their kids. These are all things that you know about. But it's unfortunate that too many of our kids, even in the church, are what we call latchkey kids. And what raises them instead of a parent or a mother is a television set or a video game like this. Our kids swear too much. Our kids in the church take God's name in vain. They think the F word is funny. They think the S-H-I word is funny. They think the word D-A-M-N is okay. Why? I'm just asking you parents to consider that. I hear it on the basketball court with your young people. They'll miss a shot or something and they'll say, oh! I won't tell you what they say. And I wonder, well, why? What are we doing? How far do we go away from teaching our kids out of God's holy word and setting the right example? Don't lose your ability to blush and to be ashamed. And yet the message is not all dismal. I don't want to be just negative today because I really want us to recognize what's available to us. You see, I do see a way out of all of this. And it may not be in my lifetime, but it is for my lifetime. It is for me. And this is the way I like to characterize it, especially in light as this pendulum of good and evil was represented early on. You know, in the horrible violence that took place there, there's one story that, though it got mentioned, somehow or another is not being talked about like all the other stories that are being talked about. You know, the monuments to the cars, and the flowers put into the little the wicker fences there and so forth. All that, that's fine and good. I'm for that. But one thing that has not really been explored was what Cassie Bernal did. That 17-year-old young girl. And that rocked me. You know what she did? I may not have it exactly right, but it's pretty close. She was frightened and scared beyond all her wits because this violence was coming down into the room in which she was located with other students. And they were looking people to shoot, whether with a shotgun or a large weapon, I don't know what it was. And they came to her. And they ask if there was anybody there who believed that there is a God. Do you get that question? Is there anybody here that believes that there is a God? There are some who would say that she should have said nothing. I tend to think she shouldn't have said nothing. But she didn't. She quietly said, there is a God. And you need to follow in his path. And he killed her. And he said to her before he killed her, there is no God. And then he shot her in the head. I want to meet that lady one day. That young 17-year-old lady. I want to meet her. I want to talk to her about the God that she believed in, that allowed her to stand up in the face of a violent act and proclaim a witness to a God that she probably didn't even fully understand. And yet, I've been moved by her example. All right, let me give you the solution. You may not like this analogy, but it's one I want you to think about. Because everything in the world is not bad, but boy, we're pretty sick. You know, I talked to you about Isaiah chapter 1, and it's pretty sick. And I sort of see we have a way out of it. This is what we've got to do. You see, I see us as in a pit. We're like in a well. I don't know how deep the well is because your well may be deeper than mine, but we're all in it. And if we're not careful, it's going to fall in on us. It's going to, you know, collapse on us. There is a way out. And the way out is through Jesus Christ. And so what Jesus Christ does makes no difference how deep you are in that well and how close you are to being killed or murdered or overcome. Jesus will throw you the rope out. And that is his grace, because he doesn't have to. He'll throw it to you. Now, let me ask you something while I interrupt myself here. Have any of you ever done any rope climbing? As a youngster, I used to rope climb in PE class. And what they would do, they had this big rope suspended from the ceiling, and our goal, we were timed to go from here to there. And
One of the things that would help you get from here to there is if there were knots on the rope. Because if it was just a straight old rope, oh, it was so hard, there was nothing to hang on to. Well, I want to tell you something. The rope that Jesus Christ has extended to us in this analogy is knotted with 10 knots. It's got 10 knots. I don't know how long that rope is to you, because I don't know how immersed and unashamed and unblushing we are. So you determine that for yourself. But the rope is still there and it's got 10 knots in it. You can get out of there. Our society can get out of it. Our nation can get out of it. Our high schools can get out of it. Our communities can get out of it. They can. But you've got to grab a hold of number one knot and have no other gods before the true God. You've got to get a hold of number three knot. Pull yourself up there and hold on, but you still got a long way to go. And you go through number four, the Sabbath commandment. You go through number five. You go through number six, don't kill. You go through number seven, you're coming out. And once you're out, through the grace that was extended to you through Jesus Christ, and you holding on, you working, you laboring to do whatever it takes to get out, you may still face something that would be unpleasant. But you know what? Spiritually speaking, you are saved. Boy, it's a struggle. Galatians chapter 6, final verse I want you to see today. Galatians chapter 6. For those of us in God's church, and those of us who want to follow the true God, for those of us who are aspiring to be able to stand up in the face of violence and say, there is a God, and you should walk in His path. Here's what we must be careful about. Galatians 6 and verse 8. For he that sows to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And here it is. Here it is. Let us not be weary in well-doing. I'll tell you something. I've climbed ropes with knots on them. Whew, it's tiring. It'll wear you out. It's just like wrestling, if any of you have ever wrestled. You think you can wrestle? You just try wrestling with someone for 3 minutes. You'll appreciate Jacob a whole lot more when he wrestled all night long. Just try climbing a rope sometime. Well, this is just an analogy, of course. My point is, it takes a lot of work. It's exhausting. The easiest thing to do is just let go and slide back down. The Bible says, don't you be weary in well-doing. For in due season, we shall reap if we don't faint. I want to ask all of us as God's people to be aware of God's laws of morality, to be aware of what God expects of us as His people. There is no way that we can get out of trauma and tribulation in this world. I'm just sorry, there isn't. Time and chance happens to every single one of us. What happened to those young people over there was just a matter of time and chance to a great degree. And what made those young people the way they are? I don't have the answer for it except to say that they weren't obeying God's laws. They weren't. But we can. So Christ has extended to you a long rope. It's well knotted. He's climbed over those knots before, and He succeeded. He wants us to do the same. Don't let go. Don't slide back down into the trap, into the pit, into the well. Pull yourself out, and you are going to be saved. Pull yourself out, and a world unlike any that any of us have ever imagined will be ours for the taking. So hang tight. Hold tight. Hang on and climb.